Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and one of the things we've been trying to do here on The Brian Lehrer Show and at WNYC in general since the financial crisis began is to bring our listening community together to help one another in various ways to get through the changes that so many of us are all going through. We've done call-ins on various peer-to-peer help questions, and we have a bulletin board on our Uncommon Economic Indicators page specifically for asking for help and doling it out. So we're delighted to see that Ron Lieber, the Your Money columnist for the New York Times, is doing two articles on how people who still have jobs might help those who don't. The first piece was in Saturday's business section. Maybe you saw it there on the front page of the B section on Saturday, with all kinds of stories of people around here helping each other. The second will be on the touchy question of when to offer cash as a way to help and when to ask for it. Ron Lieber joins us now to talk about it all. Hi, Ron. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And we'll take lots of phone calls during this. For now, listeners, any way you have helped an unemployed friend, short of giving them actual cash, or any way, if you are unemployed, that you have asked your friends for help, short of asking for actual cash. And then in a few minutes, we'll do cash stories only. But for now, anything other than cash, whether you're the asker or the helper, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Ron, what gave you the idea for these stories?
The idea actually came from my wife, who her name's Jody Cantor. She's also a reporter here at the Times. And, you know, many of the best ideas are kind of hashed out over the kitchen table. And, you know, because we work in the media, you know, we know some people who have been in this spot. And, you know, we've had friends. You know, it's interesting. The language of mourning comes up frequently. And so the things that people are doing are not dissimilar from what you would do for a friend who, say, had their house burned down or who's been ill or who lost a family member. And, you know, having experienced some of that recently, too, it just sort of occurred to us that this was an opportunity, you know, to write about it and be useful. I mean, it can be sort of depressing writing about personal finance right now, you know, after five or six columns where, you know, I'm giving advice to people who have seen so many kind of bad things happen, and there's not a lot you can do to console them other than to tell them to kind of sit and wait. Being able to do something, useful for someone at this particular moment and help them do that, you know, just seems a little bit more uplifting than a lot of what we have been reading of late.
So I'm just going to read for our listeners your big categories, the words that you put in bold face type in this article for the general categories, and then we can get into some individual stories. Tweets, and we'll talk about how Twitter might come into this. Desks, obviously, lend friends desks if they need places to work on resumes or whatever. Links, patronage, play dates, you can figure that one out. Mac and cheese, homemade, not going out to fancy dinners. Remodeling, and then the touchy one that we'll get into later, financial aid. Talk about patronage.
Well, in this particular kind of recessionary environment, I mean, this one is going to looks like it's going to be deep and long. You know, it's harder for folks to kind of wait out the bad times and look for a new full-time job working for someone else. And so people are, you know, setting up their own consulting practices in the meantime, or they're finally kind of dusting off that business plan for some great idea. And so, you know, one of the most helpful things you can do for somebody who is starting something new or trying to or thinking about it is to be their first customer. You know, you can take them on, you know, and hire them to do something for you, or you can become a customer of, you know, whatever service or product they're looking to put out into the public realm.
And you said, and probably a lot of people can relate to this, the impulse is to open your Rolodex, suggest a few names, and leave it at that. So it takes a kind of affirmative act of wanting to help to go that extra step, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, beyond just kind of opening up your contact file, you know, you can become, in effect, a sounding board or kind of like a member of the board of directors, you know, for someone who's trying to get this thing off the ground. It happened with there's a site out there called The Clever Commute that was started by a guy who used to be an IT professional at Morgan Stanley, lost his job. He created this site to help people in the tri-state area, particularly people in the suburbs who use, you know, New Jersey Transit and Long Island Railroad to email one another when things go wrong on the train or on the bus. Mm-hmm. And a friend, neighbor of his in Montclair, New Jersey, you know, has become a member of his board of riders. He uses the service and you know, helps him kind of tweak the model. And you know, because it's a hard time, you know, to be looking for IT jobs in Wall Street or in the banks, you know, where this guy has his specialty. You know, he's going to try and make this site, you know, into a real full-time business. And
I think we have a story along these lines from Barbara in Darien. Barbara, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I remember the day when we were expected to have letters of recommendation, and I decided that my friends who are unemployed, rather than just give them a name, I like to say, make the introduction and write a paragraph that really, you know, explains more about the person than just what's on the resume. And it's called More Than Just a Resume. And it's a real introduction. It's a friend reaching out for a friend and saying, listen, you really should network. Even if there's not a job today, look at what this person has to offer, you know, beyond their resume. And I have a personal recommendation for this person. And I'm giving them to my friends up front without asking and trying to be creative and trying to be clever on each one and make each one unique and speak about the person individually.
That's a great one, Barbara. Thank you very much. Shari in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shari.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. So you are out of work.
I am out of work. I was out of work for a while last summer and then found a part-time job and then got laid off because my boss decided he couldn't afford to keep me on anymore. And I have been constantly emailing out resumes and going online and everything I can. I have some friends who I don't like to ask them for money. I'm really, like, at the bottom right now. I don't like to ask my friends for money, but I do ask them for recommendations if they know anybody who's looking. And people, you know, they'll try and find me what they can. I do part-time work for people, whatever I can do. But it's very difficult.
It's hard to add. Well, stay there for a second, Shari, because,
yeah.
Ron Lieber, I'm sure that the opposite side of the coin from what you wrote at the beginning of your column, that, you know, the impulse is to open your Rolodex, suggest a few names, and leave it at that. There's also an impulse on the other side, on the part of the unemployed person, to not ask friends for too much. And so I guess part of the balancing act that we're looking for here is what should somebody really comfortably be expected to ask of their friends or give themselves permission to ask?
Well, you know, it's a tricky question. As somebody put it to me this week, there's this notion that, you know, you can only go to the well so many times. You know, there's only so many times you can ask for this kind of help. And, you know, many people have been through this, you know, multiple times, you know, recently. And so, you know, it makes it difficult. It makes it difficult to ask. But I think you should, you know, I feel like there's less and less of a stigma as time goes on. You know, somebody else put it to me this week as the sort of Hollywoodization of the working world, where, you know, we go to work on projects like movies for a year or two at a time, and then the project disbands and you've got to find something new. And also, don't forget that, you know, a lot of people who are on the other side, you know, when you're looking to make that ask, you know, they're thinking, wow, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. And, you know, and it, if they have any kind of survivor's guilt, it helps kind of assuage some of that to help people out. So I think you'll be surprised the extent to which, you know, people will say yes when you ask.
Shari, is there anything that you've wanted to ask for but just I shouldn't open my mouth?
No. You have to understand that in this economy, not everybody has things to give.
Also true.
You know, everybody's now watching out for their own backside. So it's hard to say to somebody else who's on the financial brink, can you help me?
That's true.
Right.
And Ron, in a way, you know, everybody's on the financial brink right now in a different kind of way, or maybe not everybody. But your article is targeted particularly at people who've lost jobs versus people who have jobs. Then there are people who may have jobs but have lost three-quarters of their life savings. And so, you know, everybody's in a different place on this spectrum right now.
It's true. And, you know, again, I mean, there are a lot of things that you can ask for that don't cost any money and may not even cost very much in time, you know, whether it's an introduction, which it sounds like Sherry is already doing, or just a walk in the park or some, you know, diversionary activity that kind of gets your mind off of what you're going through. You know, that can be a healthy thing, and to have a companion along who can, you know, talk about something else other than the predicament that you find yourself in, you know, it's useful psychologically to have that. And, you know, that doesn't cost so much beyond the time involved with maintaining a friendship.
Right. Now, well, here's something that somebody wrote in. Recently, a friend invited a bunch of us to her husband's birthday celebration at a fancy restaurant. I got worried because it was very expensive, and she didn't say in the email anything about the financial arrangements. The night before, I inquired about the expected financial contribution, and she said she assumed everyone would pitch in what they felt was right. So, you know, that's a touchy thing, especially since it wasn't communicated. But I think it goes to the section of your article called Mac and Cheese Homemade.
Right. You know, it's funny, when I sent out an email to my own sort of friends and contacts earlier last week, asking them for some ideas for the piece. And one of the things I mentioned is that, well, you know, you can invite your friends who are unemployed or underemployed or have lost some of their money over for, you know, a lavish dinner and make them feel, you know, nicely treated. And a whole bunch of people wrote back and said, well, no, actually, that's precisely the wrong idea, because that sort of reminds them of what they cannot afford to do for themselves now. And, you know, one person said to me that the thing that they appreciated the most was the subtle, you know, where someone else takes the initiative to suggest an activity or a restaurant, you know, that won't cost very much, so that the person on the receiving end who's lost their income or lost part of it, you know, doesn't feel like they need to make excuses for themselves or counter with a kind of cheaper proposal. So, you know, for the person who scheduled that expensive dinner party, you know, you either need to have it someplace, you know, cheaper, or you need to say so up front that, you know, you're going to sponsor the whole thing, and that way people at this particular moment, and you know, won't feel uncomfortable.
It's such an interesting thought, though, and I don't know if it applies to everybody, but probably something that hadn't occurred to a lot of folks as you wrote it up, that maybe the newly broke person, rather than being taken out to a nice restaurant dinner, which might make them feel even worse, might appreciate more just being invited over for something simple and home cooked. So that's another thing people might consider. Okay, we're gonna take a break for just a minute, and then we're gonna switch to part two, and we're gonna look for people who are in the situation that Ron Lieber, the Your Money columnist for the New York Times, is researching for his next article, and that is people who either are giving cash to their friends who are out of work, actual cash, or if you are the unemployed person and you're considering or have already asked for some money, actual money. Where does the money come in? What's the etiquette? What's socially awkward? What's just the right thing to do when it comes to cash for out-of-work friends? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you're on either end of that, and we'll take your calls in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up tomorrow, teaching students who have come to New York City public schools from war zones around the world. We will hear how two teachers use the arts to do that. Wednesday, we'll get your reactions to President Obama's Tuesday night news conference on the economy. A lot to listen for here all week this week. And I mentioned before the break that we have set up part of our Uncommon Economic Indicators site as a bulletin board now where people can ask for help of any kind getting through the recession, or people can offer it. It's been a little slow getting off the ground, to be honest, but here's a post we got the other day that I want to read in case it can help one of our listeners. And it's also very relevant to what we're discussing here with Ron Lieber, your money columnist for The New York Times. An artist named Billy Florima posted a picture of one of his paintings. Colorful, abstract. Personally, I like it a lot. But he wrote this underneath: "What I'm about to say is very difficult, but promotion is the key for success. I'm an artist, and I'm looking to expose my work. I have a small place in Brooklyn. I would like to change to a gallery, but I need help. Money. I need to know if there is help for artists." So if you want to respond to that person, you can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show for our Uncommon Economic Indicators page. And Ron Lieber, any artist might be in that position in any economy. But here we are. Notice that he did actually ask for cash in that post. I would like to change to a gallery, he wrote, but I need help. Money. I need to know if there is help for artists. So for the second column that you're writing, do you have unemployed people, or artists for that matter, overtly asking their friends for money?
Well, you know, the first thing that that goes through people's head is if you think about it this way, right? I mean, that at the end of the day is what people need most who are in this situation. And yet, you know, most people are embarrassed or ashamed or reluctant for whatever reason to ask for it. And if they do ask for it, they're probably going to ask for a loan as opposed to kind of an outright grant. And if they make the ask at all, they're probably more likely to do it with family first than with friends. So that's the kind of baseline that we're starting from here. Now, the question is, does that change, an environment that's really, seems to be kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event for a lot of us, or at least something that we've never seen, sort of quite before? So the question now becomes, should you make the offer if you're in a kind of more fortunate position, and if so, how do you make it? And if you're the person in need, is it a better time to ask, or is it more appropriate, for lack of a better word, to ask than maybe it would have been, in 2001 or 1992? And that's what I'm wrestling with this week.
So guess what, Ron? We've got a full board of calls. Let's hear some people's stories. Trish in Jersey City, you're having a rent party?
I had a rent party last Sunday, or the 15th it was, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I left my job a few years ago for a life in the arts. And the economy conspired, as did some other personal issues. And I've done pretty much everything to scrape together rent. And I've bartered. I've kept myself busy networking. I get a little bit of work. Finally got food stamps. Just whatever I can do to get by. And it wasn't working, and I felt so guilty. My landlord was not evicting me. I have not been able to pay full rent for a few months. And somehow he just decided he wasn't going to evict me. I don't know why the universe turned so beautifully in my direction, but nonetheless, he's got his bills. And I finally couldn't handle the guilt anymore.
Wow.
So I sent out an email to like over 100 people.
How did your friends react? How many of those 100 people came?
About 16. And several people who couldn't come sent me a check in the mail. And I gathered together about a half a month's rent, which is not a small amount. It's a few hundred dollars.
What do you do next month?
I don't know. I'm trying to get a roommate, but it's not the point. The point is that it was very hard to do. It was not easy to put that together. It was not easy to reach out like that. I'm still processing the generosity and goodwill of friends. We had a wonderful day. I made 4 pots of soup. I framed it.
Trish, I'm going to leave it there because we have a little time and a lot of people. But it's a wonderful story, and it's a heartwarming story. And Ron, I don't know if it's consistent with what you're finding so far, but let's listen to somebody. On the other end of it, Ed in Brooklyn is giving money. Is that right, Ed?
Yes.
To whom?
To my sister and brother-in-law. In the past, they've helped me out, and I'm in a position to be able to do so now. I think the important thing in this, to at least from my perspective, is to look at the money that you're giving less as a loan. It should be disposable income for you that you hope to get back but don't need to get back.
Is there an issue of pride involved? Are they at all reluctant to take your money?
Absolutely. Just as I have been in the past when I've been in that position, I think it was helpful for me personally to have been there in the past. Not everybody will have been on both sides of the issue. But, yes, it's, of course, a very, very difficult thing to ask. And I think it's very important to be careful in how you answer, even if you're answering in the affirmative and you are able to do it.
Ed, thank you very much. And Ron Lieber, you wrote about the pride question in your column. Does that come up a lot?
It does. But, you know, I think as things feel more precarious, there are few among us who can't at least imagine being in this situation, even if we haven't been there before ourselves. That makes it easier, I think, to reach into our pockets for those who ask. The problem with being in a precarious situation, you know, all of us though, is that it's you know, you wonder whether it's going to be you in 6 months, and you know, you're more kind of tempted to kind of marshal your resources and you know and try and keep them to yourself. So you know, that's the dilemma you go through in your head if you're the giver, I suppose.
By the way, bouncing off Trish in Jersey City, our producer looked up the history of the rent party, sometimes called a house party, a social occasion. This is according to Wikipedia, where tenants hire a musician or a band to play and pass the hat to raise money to pay their rent, originating in Harlem during the 1920s. And it says the rent party played a major role in the development of jazz and blues music. Well, maybe at least a certain kind, or that's one version of it anyway. Now, Anne in Manhattan, I think, is wrestling right now with a request for cash from a friend. Is that right, Anne?
Yes. Hello?
Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend, and her child goes to my child's school, and she's unemployed. She's a single parent, and I'm trying to help her in ways I can, which is like babysitting. I'll try and pick up her child and, of course, not charge. And the thing that I'm worried about is she thinks she can apply for uninsurance benefits, unemployment benefits, but she's concerned about doing so because she thinks she was a temporary employee. She had a W-2, and she's afraid if she applies, the company won't hire her back in the future. And I feel she could have this income, but she's afraid to do it. And I don't want to encourage her to do something that may hurt her in the future, but as a friend, I was wondering what advice to give her.
Okay, Ron, you're the Your Money Advice columnist. What do you say to Anne?
Well, I guess, you know, right off the top of my head, I'm a little bit confused about why her former employer would object to her to filing for unemployment insurance.
I think she's a freelancer and she's a temporary employee, but she did have she does work for them regularly and get what I believe is a W-2, from what I understand. And they want her back. She thinks they want her back in the future, but she's afraid that this would make them not want her back.
Maybe the employer just doesn't want to pay in. Doesn't the employer have to cover some of those unemployment benefits directly?
Well, as a general rule, yeah. But perhaps not for freelance employees, which may be the catch here. One of the helpful things that somebody suggested this week is that, you know, if you've been there yourself, you can help your friend to kind of work their way through the unemployment system, or find a friend of a friend who can, you know, get that question answered for her, whether it's a lawyer or somebody who's been unemployed themselves. As far as gifts of cash money are concerned, look, you have to be prepared for the possibility that, you know, a gift could alter the relationship in some fundamental way. Especially if you're expecting to get it back, perhaps as Ed thought he might before. It does change the terms of the relationship.
Right. But, and in fact, Jonathan from Williamsburg on a website writes, having been burned by friends in the past, I wouldn't ask my friends for money. However, since being laid off in January, I found that I can help friends tackle projects that they just can't get to for some extra cash. So that's kind of hiring yourself out, which I guess is a little different than giving. Maybe hiring a friend to do something that you might not have bothered to do or bothered to pay for otherwise. Another interesting thing from your article was that maybe sometimes it's easier if a group gets together a collection. That was an interesting thought, rather than coming from an individual. Ron Lieber, you're a money columnist for the New York Times. We have 15 seconds. Do you want to tell people where to write if they want to contribute to this coming piece on giving cash to unemployed friends?
Sure. Thanks, Brian. If you've got any thoughts on this, you can find me at rlieber, R-L-I-E-B as in boy, E-R, at nytimes.com. All ideas are welcome.
And we'll check back with you. Ron Lieber, thanks a lot for coming on today.
Thank you so much.